Thank you. Be seated.
The court is ready to hear argument from petitioners in Tilton versus Honorable Marshall.
Christianity itself will be put on trial by the trial court unless prohibition or mandamus relief is granted. This case is equally as important and equally as controversial as a related case this court heard just last year, Tilton versus Moyet. Simply stated, the issue before this court today is, did the trial court clearly abuse its discretion, violate relator's fundamental rights, or ignore two constitutions or a federal statute so as to substantially burden relator's free exercise rights when it issued a court order compelling production of relator's tithing records, when it permitted institution by plaintiffs of a sincerity of religious belief analysis without first requiring the government to meet its statutory burden, or by permitting claims involving damages for alleged emotional injury only to go forward simply because God did not answer plaintiff's prayers as they wished.
There's allegations of fraud here, serious allegations of fraud, that Reverend Tilton had no intention of praying over the request that he received. Why does the state of Texas not have a compelling state interest to regulate fraud?
I think that the state of Texas does have a compelling state interest to regulate fraud in a regular civil context. However, when you have constitutional rights, fundamental rights, such as freedom of religion and the other rights involved in this case, there must be a balancing test. And whenever you have a fundamental right, strict scrutiny must be examined. In this case, the trial court has never conducted any hearing to determine if a compelling governmental interest or any other type of interest even existed.
How would these disclosures interfere with Reverend Tilton's free exercise?
Well, as far as, when you mean the disclosures, are you referencing the tithing records?
Yes.
With regard to the tithing order, what has been required by the trial judge is that Reverend Tilton produced the last 7 years worth of his tithing records, not only records indicating the churches he supported, how many churches he supported, but also the monetary amount involved.
How would this interfere with his free exercise? I assume, the Internal Revenue Service, if you want to claim a deduction for a charitable contribution, still requires you to report the amount that you contributed. That doesn't interfere with one's free exercise. How would this?
Well, in the case of the IRS, there are very strict guidelines which the IRS must follow when it comes to tax-exempt organizations, religion being one of those. And the state certainly does have an interest in regulating those types of things, but the regulation must be very, very minimal. In this particular case...
They're not talking about regulating his exercise. They're talking about disclosing information.
If Reverend Tilton is required to produce his tithing records, and if he is, and presumably he will be, if the sincerity analysis is to take place in this case, he also will be required to prove when he prayed, how he prayed, what he prayed for. That is the most sacred right.
This is something he was marketing. Is this his personal exercise or something he's marketing to someone else?
This is not something he's marketing. This is something that he's preaching.
Wait a minute. I don't understand it. The question was, I thought, how does this defendant being required to produce the amount of money he gave affect his free exercise constitutional right?
Well, basically what the plaintiffs are trying to show is that if he did not tithe in certain amounts as he preached, that he wasn't practicing what he was preaching.
Without getting into what it shows, a relevant question.
Okay, all right.
How does the mere fact of this request impinge upon any constitutional right? We'll look at relevancy later, but relevancy is not a constitutional magnitude.
I'm having difficulty focusing on precisely the question you're asking.
You say his constitutional right, free exercise of religion, is invaded by having to disclose whether he gave money to particular charities and how much.
It invades his freedom of association. He may wish to have given money to some church other than his church, for example. It invades his privacy rights under the 14th Amendment. He has had no due process hearing with regard to this invasion of his privacy rights because no compelling state interest and the least restrictive means as required by the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993 has not been met. No hearing has even been
met. Let's just talk about the Constitution for a minute. And the question was free exercise. Is this not a free exercise issue then?
This is a free exercise issue. It's
why? But how?
It's a free association issue. Because he must be free to privately give or not give, to privately tithe or not tithe as he deems appropriate.
What's your understanding of, or what is the case's understanding? What do the cases articulate is the test for whether or not free exercise of religion has been invaded by a governmental action?
If a person is potentially at risk of having to abandon the exercise of his religion as compared to being able to tithe or not tithe free of governmental interference, I think that's the issue. And in this situation,
The test is not whether or not it requires you to act in a manner that is at odds with a fundamental tenet of religious belief, of your religious belief. Is that the way the test has been articulated?
Yes.
And how would disclosing past giving records cause the Reverend Tilton to have to act in a manner fundamentally at odds with a fundamental tenet?
It would either establish that he practices what he preaches or that he does not. And that goes directly to the sincerity analysis.
Ms. Burns, you cited the case of United States versus Ballard to support your proposition. As best as I can read in the case, though, it supports the proposition that you can, in fact, inquire as to this to whether the individual honestly believes his beliefs. You can't inquire as to the validity of his of those beliefs. It seems to me that case could support the argument that inquiring as to the conduct, that is the tithing record of Reverend Tilton, goes to the issue of whether or not he honestly believes what he says he believes, as opposed to attacking his beliefs. How does Ballard actually help you in your argument?
In this particular case, you're correct that the Ballard decision directly states that veracity of religion cannot be questioned, however sincerity in certain instances can. In this particular case, the only claims made are for emotional injury. And in all of the cases dealing with an analysis of the sincerity of one's belief, there are other types of injuries involved. There are either property rights involved or other types of injuries. In the case of Paul versus Watchtower, and this probably cites it best, the court said, offense to someone's sensibilities resulting from religious conduct is simply not actionable in tort. Without society's tolerance of offenses to sensibility, the protection of religious differences mandated by the First Amendment would be meaningless. In Ballard, what was presumably permitted was a sincerity analysis when there was some type of case to look at. And in that particular case, it was a mail fraud indictment, 18 counts that were being analyzed. In this situation, we just have an intentional infliction of emotional distress, fraud, and conspiracy claim with emotional injury only. In this particular case, you can't examine sincerity without getting into an absolute witch hunt, without conducting an absolute ecclesiastical trial. And what the plaintiffs are urging in this case now even though they originally said sincerity was not an issue, they say it is now, so that they can get into evidence such as tithing records. And the purpose of getting into the tithing records is then to tie it in to the central beliefs of this church.
Counsel, I'm concerned about what you said would amount to a virtual ecclesiastical trial. How is objective evidence of a person's conduct in the exercise of their personal faith an ecclesiastical trial? Because what they're measure, what they want, I presume, this evidence for is to measure it against his professions to other people whom he entices to send him money.
In this case, the reason it would be an absolute ecclesiastical...
They're not condemning what he does or does not do, per se, are they?
Yes,
his
they are.
His exercise. What they're, I think, trying to condemn is his activity in regard to other people, yes. Not his relationship with God.
No, they are condemning that. In fact, they're wanting to discover if God speaks with Reverend Tilton, what Reverend Tilton says to God in his prayers.
How is that... How is that a condemnation or a trial of his faith?
That's all they want to do is try his faith. In this particular case, they want to try the religious speech, the representations he made from the pulpit, and they want to claim those to be false, fraudulent representations. Particularly, this whole case boils down to one issue, and that is the power of prayer a reality or not? Reverend Tilton will be put to the test of proving that the power of prayer works or does not work.
Isn't this basically a sincerity test that you're describing, his professions from the pulpit as opposed to his personal private practices, which no one seeks to interfere with? But is he practicing what he's preaching? They're not condemning what he's practicing. They're saying, but he's preaching this in order to entice us to send him money.
Actually, the briefing does condemn what he is preaching, the content of what he is saying, and what the representations are. And without certain representations, there would be no lawsuit. Had these people's prayers been answered the way they wish them answered, there would be no litigation.
Part of the allegation is that the defendant promised to physically pray over certain requests, to actually touch them. And the allegation is that that was not done. Did those allegations in any way, are there any constitutional prohibitions against such allegations being made and proof of those allegations going to trial? That is, no representation about whether he could or could not do certain things or what effect they would have or whether he was sincere or not, but just promising that he would physically touch something and physically offer a prayer, and the allegation that he did not do that.
Yes, Your Honor. In Thomas versus Review Board, the United States Supreme Court stated courts are not arbiters of scriptural interpretation.
And well, is it a scriptural interpretation to say I will pray over this particular piece of paper and then not do so?
No, the term touching, for example, and the evidence is that he did pray over all these things, but the dispute involves whether he physically touched each piece of paper or each stack of papers when he prayed.
Or whether he even saw it. Isn't that part of the dispute?
That may or may not be part of the dispute at this point. They've never developed that evidence. It has been developed in other cases, but not in this specific case. But the touching element goes to the prayer of agreement, which we've briefed, and I think we've cited this touching definition from King James in one of our footnotes in the briefing. But yes, I mean, this is asking the courts to scripturally interpret what touching means in order to determine if he touched the prayers and therefore prayed appropriately. And this is the precise constitutional thing that we don't think the courts can address, is how he prayed, whether it was sufficient. As far as getting back to the sincerity analysis of...
Excuse me, counsel, your time has expired.
Thank you.
We'll hear more on rebuttal.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court. I'd like to start by saying that I think Mr. J.C. Joyce, an attorney in Tulsa, Oklahoma, said it all when he said in federal court on the record, the right to believe what we choose to believe is absolute. We even have the right to defraud people with that belief. Mr. Tilton has also acknowledged that that's his position in trial in Dallas, Texas a few months ago. When they talk about the touching, which is one of the issues that was raised, we do allege that this is a case of fraud. Robert Tilton tells his audience that he prays over and he touches the correspondence. But he goes a bit farther than that. In that, he shows himself on these infomercial type programs, and by the way, he isn't preaching from the pulpit. The allegations we're making deals with a program he calls Success in Life, which is totally different from his, quote, church. This Success in Life started when J.C. Joyce, and this has all been developed, when J.C. Joyce, this attorney from Tulsa, Oklahoma, who represents a lot of evangelists, came into the life of Robert Tilton. Robert Tilton, by his own admission, was broke. His church was going down the tubes. When J.C. Joyce came into his life, and they started this program called Success in Life. With regards to the touching issue, he goes farther than just saying, I touch all this correspondence and pray over it. He actually shows this on television of him bending over piles of correspondence to give the impression to the listening audience that he in fact does touch and pray over this correspondence, which is about 500,000 pieces of material a year, I believe is the figure, a month, 500,000 pieces a month.
If he doesn't, how is that action?
Because it's defrauding the people that have the right to believe that part of why they want to live or to receive this, which Tilton says God is going to give them. Part of the process is that this man actually touches my correspondence.
So they agree that if he had, their prayers would have been answered, but because he didn't, they're not.
They have the right to believe that he done what he said he would do, him saying he's a prophet of God, that this would have happened. What they're finding now is that all the links in the chain were not there. And in addition,
would you distinguish for the court, please, the difference between free exercise and the right to defraud? I don't think anyone argues that the United States Constitution gives everyone the absolute right to believe what they want to believe and to exercise that belief so long as it does not infringe upon other people's turf. What is the difference between Reverend Tilton's right to the free exercise of his religion and the exercise of it in private and his public professions to other people and evidence of how that relates to his free exercise?
I think that's when you have to get into the issue of sincerity. Does he really believe that which he's representing to the people? And in our position, he is representing that he believes these things in order to solicit the money. And we say he doesn't believe those things. He doesn't practice those things.
So a jury is going to be asked to judge his sincerity and his beliefs. Do you, based on the evidence, believe that Reverend Tilton is sincere or really believes what he says he believes?
Absolutely.
That's not the issue?
I thought you said that I believe it's
No, no, no. That's the issue the jury's going to be submitted.
Right.
How can you try that issue? I mean, every pastor in the United States stands up and says things and encourages others to profess and to believe, and many of them ask for money to support the institutions that they represent or maybe themselves. Yet you can follow their lives, and it won't be hard to find most of them departing more or less from what they say. And all those people buying a jury trial.
I think, in trying to answer your question, and I honestly don't know that I can, I think what we have here is not, this is a business. The Success in Life is a business. That's all it is. It's not, it's hiding under the veil of religion. And my position has been from day one involved in these cases, and I've said this to every court we've been before, and I say to this court, I represent some people that feel like they have been defrauded. If this court finds that that type of conduct is protected by the Supreme Court of the United States, so be it. I got other things to do. And I don't know all the answers to all these questions. I have some confusion myself. But I do believe that this man is defrauding the citizens of this country. I believe he's defrauded my clients, and I'm doing what I can to try to do something about it.
Is evidence of his exercise of his religious faith an interference with that exercise? Is his, with the requirement to disclose what he actually does in the exercise of his faith, his personal, private exercise, with the requirement to disclose evidence of that exercise, be an interference with it?
In my opinion, yes. That was all there was to it. In regards to the tithing records, he publicly discloses who he claims to give the tithing to give money to, the mission fields. He publicly discloses. So I think he's taken that out of the private sector and put it into the public. Now our question is, show us the evidence. That's part of why we believe in you, Robert Tilton, because you tell us that you give money to these missions bills all over the country, and you tell us that you practice what you're telling us to practice in order to get what God has for us. We would like to see evidence of that, if you have. We'd like to see it. And secondly, what we're asking for here is nothing more than what Robert Tilton might be asked for in a divorce case, and the spouse divorce lawyer being entitled to receive. It has nothing to do with religion.
Mr. Counsel, you started out a while ago to say that you were only talking about his radio, his TV program.
Yes.
And as opposed to a church operation.
Yes, sir.
I don't believe I followed through how you have broken the two apart.
Robert Tilton has started a TV program about 10 years ago called Success in Life. It's totally disassociated from his church activity. It's not ministry from his pulpit. It's a TV show that's gone nationwide, and he represents that he is, of course, Word of Faith.
So the things that you're complaining about are all related to this TV program.
Sir. Absolutely.
What he says and what he has done in relation to the TV program.
Has nothing to do with what he said or done at his church and behind his pulpit.
Mr. Richardson, in that connection, if the prayers of your clients have been answered in the manner in which they wish to be, those prayers have been answered, you would not be here today.
I would have to say it's probably true.
Can you help me distinguish between your case and a case where an ordinary minister stands up and says, I tithe and you should too, and it turns out he doesn't?
I think the only way I can try to answer that is to say that Robert Tilton tells the people, God has spoken to me about you, and he writes it. And what happens, let me tell you a little bit about how this happens. He has a TV show, he has testimonials, they're sensationalized. God's done all these wonderful things for Mrs. Elliott here. And call this number. So they call the number, they get the folks' name and address, and immediately they send them this letter that has all these testimonials in it that God did all these wonderful things because Jane sent her $1,000. Now he's tying to the money because Jane vowed her $1,000, and he will say, maybe you aren't getting your miracle because you only vowed $1,000. God wants you to vow $5,000 or $10,000. So he's tying to the money aspect as part of the rationale of why you're going to get your miracle. So he gets all these people out here to start sending the money in under the representations that he's made, and then it doesn't happen. And they say, this man's a fraud and a con artist. Because if he's a prophet of God, as he says he is, and these things he says are true and correct, I did what he asked me to do, and the miracle didn't happen, so this man is a con artist and a fraud. And
he never says, though, that he guarantees these things, does he?
No, sir.
He just says he's going to ask God to do these things.
But
he doesn't make a commitment on God's behalf that it'll take place.
But nobody needs a guarantee from the prophet of God.
And that's what the case is about.
Right.
Whether he's a prophet of God, that's what you say the issue is?
I'm sorry?
You're saying the issue is whether he's in fact a prophet of God. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying he's making false misrepresentations, but he's gaining their confidence by telling these people he is a prophet of God.
And you're going to try the issue as to whether he's a prophet of God?
No.
Is that your position?
No.
What issue specifically are you going to try?
The issues we want to try is the fraud issues. For example, he says that his own lawyer has been stated as saying, this Jesse Joyce, that Robert Tilton prays over and touches all of the correspondence. And if he doesn't do that, he's committed fraud and should be dealt with. That was early on in all this discovery some 2 years ago.
What's the issue you're going to try?
The issue we will try is the fact that Robert Tilton made false misrepresentations to the folks in the audience by telling him that he was doing things that he wasn't doing.
Specifically what?
Well, one good example is the touching of the correspondence, reading over it, which he doesn't do. If I had time and could tell you how this all works, I think I could help you understand this. I'll try to do it quickly. The folks send a letter in.
Tell me what would be your issue with the jury. I've read your briefs. Tell me what the jury issue would be.
Well, the issue, of course, is going to be, is Robert Tilton a fraud? That's going to be the issue.
On what specific evidence, can we take them off on? What would you say are the fraudulent misrepresentations, specifically?
Well, number one, he tells them that he touched that. I've already said that 3 times, so I'll repeat that. He tells them that he leads them to believe that he wrote the letter that they received. We know for a fact he didn't write the letter they received. The correspondence that goes back.
Who wrote the letter?
He has ghostwriters.
But in his employ, somebody in his employ wrote it?
He hires someone, not from California or wherever.
So if someone in our office writes a letter that we sign, is that a misrepresentation? We didn't type it ourselves?
No, I'm not talking about typing. I'm talking about he writes a letter, says, God spoke to me this morning about you, Justice Hightower, and he told me that he wants to do these wonderful things in your life. When I spoke to him this morning, and what you need to do is send some money. He didn't even write that letter. And yet he's telling all this that God spoke to him about you. That's fraud.
Mr. Richardson, before you continue enumerating the issues that you're going to submit to the jury in response to Justice Owen's question, with regards to touching, before you leave that subject, the way you define touching may be different from, but you only have one definition, and that is physically touching. And that's the only thing touching means to you or to your client. Is that correct?
Probably true, yes.
So if there are some... some clergy or people of faith that have a different definition that encompasses a broader definition of touching, you say that the jury is going to have to pass on whether that was clergy or right or whether your definition is correct.
I'm saying that if that's the case, this man ought to tell the people that they're listening to him, because he knows that they think touching is what I'm saying touching is, and that's touching. And also the letters that... He leads them to believe that he reads every letter that comes in. Well, we know that's ridiculous, but little Mrs. Jones out here doesn't know he gets 500,000 letters a month, and he's got a group of people up in Tulsa, Oklahoma that he's never seen or talked to that has form letters over here that they get a letter in and they scan it, and they pull a form letter over here. It's got Robert Tilton's signature on it that he didn't even write himself, and sends it back to them.
Would you answer the rest of the question for Justice Owen and for me as to what other issues you're going to ask the jury to pass on?
Well, I feel a little bit like a duck out of water. I'm more a trial lawyer rather than a technician, but the facts of the case that are at issue is the fact of fraud. And then, of course, the evidence that will be presented are the things that I started enumerating a few moments ago, such as the fact that he tells them that he reads over the letter, reads their letters, which he doesn't do. He doesn't even see most of them. That they're all sent to him, which they aren't. We've learned now that in many instances, it's nothing more than a computer list with a name on it and marriage counseling or or healing, something of that nature. We say that the entire program is nothing more than a commercial event that's couched in the terms of religion, and the, use the word I probably shouldn't use in here, they're taking advantage of people.
You're saying he's a charlatan. You're saying he's a fraud.
Right.
That's your whole case.
Yes.
Is there any allegation that the money that is sent is used in a certain way? You mentioned missions.
Yes, ma'am. For example, in one case, case we've already tried, it was represented to the people that their money would be used if they would let them do a testimonial, which they end up sensationalizing, and that's what this lawsuit was all about. We've already tried against Robert Tilton in federal court in Dallas, got a successful verdict, and the same issue was there, this man is fraud and a con artist.
I don't understand your answer. Does he say that the money will be used for...
He told the people there that the money that would be raised by their by them doing this testimonial would be used to build a clinic and to hire psychiatrists to help people that have been sexually abused, as this lady said she had been sexually abused. And that they would help his organization by doing this testimony, that then he could help that happen. And the truth is, who knows what happened with the money. And,
Counsel?
Yes, sir.
If you're not permitted to examine whether or not Mr. Tilton does what he tells people he's going to do, and if you're not permitted to examine objective exercise of his personal faith and compare it, if you will, to what he professes publicly to people that he entices money from, Is Mr. Tilton's Oklahoma lawyer right that this, in addition to the absolute right of the free exercise of his religious faith, is he entitled to defraud people in the name of that? I mean, do people have no recourse against charlatans
that
do what you're describing?
If you rule against us, that's, in my opinion, exactly what
so the Constitution protects that type of behavior,
right,
that type of fraud, that type of misrepresentation,
yes,
that type of
exactly
enticement.
To rule against this case is to make that decision.
And they call it the exercise of religion.
Right.
Counsel, I'm still confused about the extent to which you're going to try Mr. Tilton's personal faith and his subjective belief. You've said here today in response to questions that the sincerity of his beliefs is an issue.
I'm sorry.
The sincerity of Reverend Tilton's belief is an issue in this case. You've told us that, everyone.
I said that I think we're entitled to look at that issue.
But on page 4 of your brief to this court, you said that opposing counsel had blatantly misstated and mischaracterized your claims and position. Plaintiffs do not question Tilton's sincerity of religious beliefs, but rather question whether Tilton even considers his conduct to be of a religious nature. Do you stand by this distinction that's in footnote 5 of your brief? And if so, what is that distinction?
I don't stand by it. Okay. I didn't write it. I
don't
stand by it.
Okay. Ghostwriter? Is that actionable? Can somebody sue you for fraud?
That is court decision. That it?
Any other
questions? I'd like to answer Justice Becker's question. You referred us to another case. We're talking about this case, the evidence in this case. Is there any representation in this case that money would be spent in any particular fashion?
Well, the folks that I represent listen to the presentations all the time Robert Tilton made. And they heard him, and I can't stand here today and tell you that they say they heard him say that he was going to give money to the mission fields, because I've never asked him that question. So I'm not going to stand here and represent, but I have But I know he represents that. He says it on TV. He talks about all the money he gives to the mission fields. And that's why we ask for the records, is we'd like to see if, in fact, he does.
And those are statements he makes on the
yes.
Success in Life program.
Yes.
Not, he doesn't talk about mission fields during his church service.
I don't know if he does or not, because I've never been there. But I know he talks about them in the Success in Life program.
Mr. Richardson, this question, I know your time is up, but we have talked about the representations that have been made, and you argue that the touching and the reading are misrepresentations, but as a fact, your clients all claim that what they sought, one sought to regain physical custody of her children, and one sought, I think it was the restoration of health, and neither of those came to pass. And they sued Reverend Tilton because he represented to them that if they performed certain conduct, if they did certain conduct, that the Lord would be pleased with their conduct and that the Lord would hear their prayers. Isn't that the basis of what he was telling them to do and the basis for why they should?
I would probably go even a little farther, Your Honor, in saying that, for example, in the case of the Highs, on giving your children back, that was represented to them that if they would
attach the prayer cloth to the children's clothes.
Right. He even set up a prayer cloth and said, cut it up in little pieces and attach it to some new clothing and send it to your children. And that way God will be able to bring about this miracle of you getting your children back.
The tragedy of these cases is pretty marked, but isn't the final analysis your statement to this court that the essence of your case is to prove that the misrepresentations that were made were Robert Tilton's and not God's?
Right.
And aren't we in a position of entertaining whether or not God was doing this?
Maybe.
Any other questions? The court is ready to hear rebuttal argument.
Counsel, if a fraud case can theoretically be tried, I think as you conceded at the beginning of your argument, and all of us are having difficulty separating fraud allegations that you conceive can be tried from other allegations that perhaps cannot. Why doesn't your client have an adequate remedy by appeal after a record is made in this case and we can see what the evidence is, as opposed to a mandamus when we don't know what the evidence is going to be?
Well, first of all, I don't concede that a fraud action against my client under these facts is appropriate. The reason being, if people, as Judge Spector asked, if people gave money for a specific purpose, whether it's the Jim Baker case or if there is a specific promise that if you give me $10, this will go toward the support of needy people or something like that, then perhaps there might be an action for fraud because the person is being duped out of that money. Perhaps. I don't know that there would necessarily be an action, but perhaps there could be. Or if there is a specific economic injury, perhaps there could be an action for fraud. But in this case, where you have emotional injury only, I submit that you cannot have an action for fraud. And Paul versus Watchtower Bible and Tract Society is very clear on that.
So if they had made a claim for the amount of money they sent, that they would not have sent but for fraudulent misrepresentation?
If they made some type of contract claim that they didn't get the benefit of their bargain, they were trying to buy a prayer, and if the money had been sent and the prayer had been made and then the miracle didn't happen and they could link it all up, as Mr. Richardson said, it's very crystal clear you can do that, that would be one thing. He's not sued for return of any donation, any tithe, any gift, any contribution. He sued for hurt feelings. for emotional injury. In response to
why isn't there an adequate remedy by appeal is my basic question.
Because this is an infringement on his practice of religion. Even 1 second of denying religious liberty in this country can never be repaired. Having an appeal, having an award against him, appealing it, having it reversed, is not going to help anything.
How already, does this deny his religious liberty? How would regular trial, regular appeal deny him free exercise of his religious faith?
That effect. As a result of just the pleadings being filed, the spurious allegations being made, donations to his church have gone down, members have left the church.
How does that interfere with his personal exercise of his religious faith?
Because the exercise of his religious faith is to spread the word of God to as many people as he possibly can through whatever means necessary. The donations go down, he can't afford airtime, so he can't broadcast. Therefore, he's reduced to smaller one-on-one type things or just in his church. He is not being able to do the number one thing Christians are told to do, which is witness and spread the word of God to others. That is an incredible infringement on his right and on the church's right.
How does this interfere with his free exercise of his religion and his God-given instruction to be an evangelical? How does this interfere with that? I mean, he may not have the audience that he personally wants, but maybe it's one God wants him to have.
Well, I won't predict what God may want because that's what Mr. Richardson is claiming in this case. But in his personal religious liberty is being restricted when he's not in a position to go out. For example, right now, he's not in a position to preach what he wants to preach.
When he's cut off from other people's money, he can't exercise his religion?
No, in this particular case, if this court permits this case to go forward, he cannot exercise his religion unless he's prepared to prove his religion. He must prove that if you pray that God answers miracles. He has to prove it. That is absolutely incapable of proof.
Is this what they're asking him to show? Are they asking for evidence of what he really does?
What they're asking is to go into court to put on as much evidence as they can about personal issues, things which otherwise are irrelevant, in order to effectively shift the burden before a jury so that he has to prove his religion, his faith in his religion, and his adherence to his religion.
Counsel on the other side said that if Mr. Tilton were going through a divorce right now, and most of the evidence that they're trying to solicit here, or gain access to here, were requested in a divorce case, he would be compelled to disclose it in a divorce case, and that is, as far as what's done with the money is concerned. Whether he tithes, that's valid evidence in a divorce case when it comes to dividing property between the parties.
Even in a divorce case, there would have to be a balancing test done. No balancing test has been done in this case. And there is no divorce going on, and that's not an issue. As far as one question I think that you asked, or
counsel, your time has expired.
Let me ask one question. Is there a distinction between this case and the one that was tried in the United States District Court in the Northern District?
Absolutely. That was a contract claim, a pure contract claim.
Was an effort made to halt that trial on the basis that it infringed upon Mr. Tilton's fundamental constitutional rights?
It was not, other than by filing motions for summary judgment, but no appellate review was sought.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. I conclude the oral argument in this call. The court will now take recess until 2 p.m.
I'm